I'm Kristen Duffy for Smart Trend News. Owner of Segway Incorporated, James Heselden, has died after driving one of the company's vehicles off of a cliff.
Hello, and welcome to the CultCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah, and joining me today, his beard musk is a powerful pheromone. I can only be talking about Buster Heine.
Hey, man.
Also with us, you might walk into your local pub on a Friday night, Saturday night. You might find him with an ale held high. Of course, if you go in there on a Monday, he might be there. Occasionally the following Tuesday. Of course, Leander Caney is here with us. Leander.
Hello, Evan. Thank you.
And finally, I can't tell if the jeans he's wearing were made for men or women. But in either case, he's working them. Alex E. Heath is here.
Hello.
Welcome back, Alex.
Making my triumphant return.
Are they men's jeans or women's jeans?
They're neutral.
They make just neutral gender jeans?
Pretty much.
I didn't know that. We learned something new here today, folks, and we're probably going to learn a lot more new stuff. We're going to be talking about this week's best Apple stories. We are going to be discussing the future of Apple TV. Now, before Buster Sizen's like, we just talked about this, there's actually been a few more rumors that have come out. So we're going to touch lightly upon this topic. And I might give you some hashtag scoops. We'll see. We'll see.
Dude,
how it
goes. Your scoop from a couple weeks ago is actually turning out to be true. It's crazy.
Did you guys doubt me? I told you it was a major scoop. Major inside sources. And I brought that scoop to our listeners, so I hope they appreciate that. We're going to be talking about this new unofficial Steve Jobs book, Leander, and I'm going to be interested to hear your take on it because Apple has actually come out and backed this book,
right?
Which I think is really strange, very odd. Don't you think it's a little weird?
Well, it's definitely unusual. Yeah, this is the first one that they've given their approval to and collaborated with. But, you know, I have very mixed feelings about it, which we can talk about later.
Okay, so we'll talk about that. And stick around to the end. Faves and Raves and Faves and Raves is back. We'll be doing an all-new Faves and Raves towards the end of the show. And I've got a monster of a pick. It's just going to just straight up chew you guys up and spit you out. And I'm going to walk away victorious. Make sure you guys have your picks, Leander, all set.
Right.
Search frantically around your desk for something to talk about. Before we jump into the fun, I would like to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners get organized, save time invoicing, and get paid faster. We all use FreshBooks because it makes our lives easier and it makes tax time a cinch. Get started with a free trial over at freshbooks.com/cultcast. And please use the phrase cultcast in the how did you hear about us section. I also want to thank Chipolo for supporting this episode.
Not Chipotle.
Not Chipotle. Chipolo.
No.
Chipolo.net. Have you ever spent time during your week looking for something that you own but that you've misplaced, like your keys, your wallets, maybe a child, Leander?
Yeah, children for sure.
So Chipolo makes Bluetooth tracking sensors that you can put on your key ring, you can attach to your MacBook, you can put in your wallet. And with the Chipolo app, you can actually locate anything that you've misplaced. So if you've lost your keys, with the Chipolo app, you can actually just activate the Chipolo sensor, and it has a built-in speaker, and it will make a insanely loud noise so you can find your item that you've misplaced. Or you can use the app to actually have it direct you towards where the item is placed. Chipolo can walk you straight over to your device or your wallet or whatever you want to attach it to so you can find it. Check them out, chipolo.net, Chipolo.net. If you're tired of losing stuff and wasting time looking for your keys and your wallet or your MacBook or whatever it is that you have in your life that you're losing, I want to thank Chipolo for supporting this episode, Alex. Alex, is your mic unmuted?
It is now,
okay,
yes.
Okay, good. Thank you. So, duders, I thought maybe we could start with some Apple TV news. Buster, Apple TV rumors.
Uh-huh.
All right, here we go. So this is kind of a weird one, although Alex, you mentioned this earlier. It does kind of seem like my Scooptacular episode a couple episodes ago. My Scooptacular predictions are starting to potentially come true. So BuzzFeed News reported, by the way, BuzzFeed News reporting Apple News. Is this a first for them?
Well, they got John Pikowski from Recode, who's always has a lot of great scoops.
So did he leave Recode and go work for them?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so that explains why all of a sudden they're talking about Apple stuff. I was kind of surprised to see the byline. According to John and BuzzFeed News, Apple intends to show off an all-new Apple TV, totally revamped, hardware-wise, looks-wise, at WWDC in June. And he said the device was going to be significantly overhauled, and it wasn't going to be just about TV. It's a bigger vision than that. And think TV, music, apps, and home automation. But the big thing was App Store. So they're going to finally have a full-on App Store available for your Apple TV. And it's interesting because some people were pondering, because the rumored A8 chip, Apple A8 chip, would be used in the all-new Apple TV. And that chip is about as powerful as a PS3. If we actually might see Apple build in some type of gaming console experience into the Apple TV. Buster, what say you?
I don't think it'll be a dedicated gaming console, but I think it'll have, like, you know, it's a processor, so it has the ability to play games and do a lot of other stuff too.
When I was reading this, I kind of was surprised when they compared it to a PS3. I thought the A8 chip was a lot more powerful than a PS3.
Oh, really?
Like, really? A PS3? Really? That's as powerful as it gets?
I don't know. I thought the PS3 was, like, super powerful for its time, wasn't it?
Well, it was.
Supercell technology and stuff.
It came out like 8 years ago, though.
Oh, I can't remember.
Well, I mean, they've integrated those MiFi controllers into iOS now. So really, if they're going to be building an app store, I guess what would prohibit them from allowing you to play games on your TV?
Yeah, well, I guess it would. It has to compete even, with like the Fire TV.
Even if they don't include games, though, just think of all the video apps that'll be on there. Like, you won't have to go through Apple, so you won't have to be like CNN to get your app on the Apple TV. Like, if you're a video company or something like that, or a news station or something, you can just immediately get an app on the Apple TV.
Right, exactly. And I think it's gonna be huge. All of a sudden you're gonna start seeing all these apps for the Apple TV come out. Do you guys think that this rumor has any credibility?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't think Pachowski's been wrong. Like,
yeah, he's always right.
Really?
He's like the closest to Gurman you can get, I think.
I think he's definitely more reliable than Gurman.
Yeah, he doesn't post
post stuff that, like, is off ever, so
that he can't, like, 100% confirm.
Yep.
I think what does it for me here is Apple has changed their website now. So Apple TV says starting at $69. Why would they put starting at $69 if they weren't planning on having more than one model? Any disagreement there?
Oh man.
That's like, That seems kind of strange that they even did that, that they actually alluded to the fact that there's going to be more than one model before they actually talked about a second model. And for me, it's kind of like conclusive evidence. Like, we're definitely going to see. Definitely.
Scootmeister, you
they,
know. Those.
They said starting, so it's got to be.
Right, definitely confirmation.
Are you being serious, Leander, or are you just making fun of me?
Making fun of you, yeah. It's completely idiotic.
Thank you.
Well, what else could it possibly mean, starting at $69? Why would they say that if there wasn't going to be one that wasn't $69?
Well, that might be true, but it gives absolutely no insight whatsoever into what they're planning to do. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not saying we know what they're going to do. I'm just saying it seems like they're going to have two different models. One's going to be the $69 model. And then the other one is going to be probably priced, you know, I don't know, closer to $200 or something.
$200? No.
I'm just, hey, look, I don't want to give away any of my sources, so I can't go into any more details. But
it's going to be somewhere between 69 and
500.
200, yeah, right.
Exactly. And in the next 12 to 36 months, I think we'll see something be announced.
Something new. Yeah.
But
well, I want to look into it. They've got a whole bunch of interesting patents that going back for years for the magic wand, which I think, you know, when Jobs said to Isaacson that he'd cracked it, he'd seen the future of TV, I think that's what he was referring to, because there's been hints, you know, in a couple of things that Johnny Ive's design lab has been working on this, something called a magic wand. And I only looked at a couple of patents real quickly, so, you know, I don't have a really good idea of all the things that it can do. Mm-hmm. But it's supposed to be like some kind of Wii-like controller mm-hmm. that has a bunch of motion sensing in it, and then maybe Siri, I think, built in. That, you know, would that apparently, I don't know, they were really excited about. There was a couple of, I can't remember where it was. There was a quote somewhere where they were really excited about this thing. They'd been playing around with it for a long time.
Well, clearly, if they're going to be charging more for it, you know, and if it's, if there's one that's $69, I think they're going to have to charge considerably more than that to have another model. They're going to have to build in some type of cool features that's going to make you want to spend the extra money on the Apple TV.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see whether it becomes like, you know, what kind of hub it becomes for your home network and all the smart stuff it's going to work with. And
yeah, I think TV, I think Apple TV, the TV part is just the beginning. We're going to see way more stuff. Okay, so let's move on, because I know we've talked about Apple TV for like the last two shows. I thought this was really entertaining. Do you guys think that eventually we're all going to end up not just owning a Mac, but maybe having a Mac be our master?
A Mac be our master.
Where you're not, yeah. Where you don't own your Mac, but your Mac owns you.
You're going to have a Mac man.
So apparently Steve Wozniak, and he's not alone in this, thinks that eventually technology is going to become self-aware. I'm paraphrasing here. And that we actually all do have something to be genuinely concerned about. Steve Wozniak was saying recently that he believes in these kind of doomsday scenarios. He said, if we build these devices to take care of everything for us, eventually they'll think faster than us and they'll get rid of slow humans to run companies more efficiently. Will we be the gods? Will we be the pets? Will we be the ants that get stepped on? I don't know that. So, kind of implying that once computer, like once your Mac becomes powerful enough, that really it's just going to realize that it doesn't need you anymore.
That's right. It's going to fiddle with the brakes in your Apple car, right? Right,
exactly. Which it will be connected to at all times. And it'll unlock your home for other machines to come in and attack you, because it will be controlling your house locks and your heat and everything via the Apple TV.
Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking think that AI will eventually destroy humanity. So,
well, there's a lot of that going around. You see that there was a really, this guy wrote a couple of interesting posts that went viral on the net maybe like about 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who this guy was. He's like some sort of, you know, he had his own blog, but they were interesting posts. He said he really dug into AI. He'd written everything he'd read everything that was about the, you know, the state of the art, and that there's a lot, you know, that there's going to be a singularity, and that point, you know, there's only going to be two options for humanity, and it's either like to turn it off or to become subsumed to this higher intelligence that's going to like hockey stick. You know, because once it achieves a certain level of intelligence, it'll just keep increasing it in this naturally increasing cycle.
Right.
And it was all really like, it seemed really kind of reasonable. And you go, and you know, one thing seemed to follow another, and then you end up with this, like, you know, oh yeah, we're going to be enslaved, just like in you know, the Terminator movies. And that I thought was a little bit of a leap of faith. You know, that this thing would have no choice but to treat us like insects.
Right, and it would have to like make us think that we're happy, and maybe plug us into a system where it could generate power off of our body heat.
Right, yeah, exactly. And that we would be enemies because we'd be able to turn it off or something like that. There was some you know, huge logical leap like that. That was like okay.
I think it's funny. I never think about AI taking over our world and becoming our masters. I suppose it's possible, but this is the level these guys think at. And I'm not saying they're right or wrong. Who knows what's going to happen. But the fact that they're even thinking about this being a possibility, I think it just says volumes about the types of things they spend their days thinking about, because this never even would have occurred to me. And I think it's funny to talk about, because I think there's very little chance this will actually ever happen. I talk to Siri now, and Siri can't even understand, you know, 80% of the things I say, let alone think for herself and come up with her own original thoughts.
You don't believe in the robot apocalypse, man?
Hey, look, I hope it happens.
You hope it happens?
Yeah, I want to fight in the rebel army. Ugh. I want to have a cool scar that goes across my face, and I want to have to build, like, cover cybernetic organisms with, you know, fake human flesh. I hope all that stuff happens. That sounds like a fun future. I just don't think that we're going to see it.
Well, I mean, if we don't destroy each other before that, we get to that point.
Yeah, I think there's probably more odds of that happening.
Yeah.
We use technology to destroy each other, or we destroy each other on accident than technology becoming self-aware. Leander, do you think that one day robots are going to take over and enslave us all?
No. Never.
I don't either. But it's funny that Waz genuinely believes that this could actually be true.
I think he's probably hallucinating after eating too much PJ Chang's, right?
I heard that too much orange chicken will do that too. It's funny. If you guys ever follow him on Foursquare, I used to follow him on Foursquare. All it is him checking into airports and restaurants. That's all it is.
They're all weird chain restaurants too.
Are they? Well, that's the stuff that you find in like the airport lounge.
Well, he even in San Jose and you know all around the Silicon Valley, he keeps going to these weird chain restaurants. It's odd.
Well, if the robots do become self-aware, I think Waz is going to be one of the first ones to be enslaved because he carries around that big bag of gadgets at all times, doesn't it? Doesn't he?
Right, and they're going to take over his Segway.
What's the Segway's taking? It's over.
Right, yeah, exactly. Game over for Waz, right.
We need to have him back.
Come on, get me up here.
We need to have him back on the show before that happens.
And ask him about this very topic. Are you worried your Segway is going to become self-aware and drive you off a cliff? drive you off some ravine. Oh, that's a great way to die, though.
Yeah.
That's like a baller way to go. You're like trying to lean.
I don't know about that.
It.
He'd be flailing around like a ridiculous puppet, wouldn't he? It'd be like one of those bad movies where they chuck a dummy off a cliff, right? And it's obviously not a human being. That's what he would look like.
Oh, I can't. You gotta stop, Leander. My stomach's hurting me. Oh my gosh, Waz flying off a cliff on a self-aware Segway.
Did you know he rides into town every morning on his Segway?
What?
Because he doesn't have internet access at his house, so he said that during the FCC thing about Nandu Chadha, he was being interviewed. He's like, yeah, I ride into town every day on my Segway. So he's going like down a hill on his Segway every morning. One day that Segway is just going to be like, nope,
sharp left turn.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have internet at his house because he can't get internet at his house, is what you mean, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, it seems weird that he wouldn't have internet at his house. Okay. Let's talk about this new Steve Jobs bio. It's called Becoming Steve Jobs. It's written by Brent Schlender and Rick Tetzeli. And it's getting a lot of press recently because it has a lot of Steve Jobs anecdotes inside. But also, Apple came out and officially backed this biography. In fact, Eddie Q on Twitter said, best portrayal is about to be released, Becoming Steve Jobs book. Well done and the first to get it right. I'm sure that he means second best.
I know. I was like, what the hell? Inside Steve's brain. Come on, Eddie. Get it right.
Obviously, what this means is he hasn't read your book because he wouldn't be able to make this statement if he had.
Well, I didn't, you know, give him the old grease. I didn't grease enough palms, I don't think, to get the official nod.
Well, I don't think anyone has enough grease to make those palms greasy, which is why it's so strange that they're officially backing this book. And I just think it's weird that Apple is officially backing a book, but let alone anything as a company, to officially back something as a company, because you have so many different employees that you represent. I just think it's strange that they would put all their weight behind a product like this. Why do you think they are so keen on this book, Leander?
Well, I read it. I've read it back to cover to cover. I just finished it last night. So the last couple of days I've been reading it. Yeah, and you know, it has a lot going for it. It's they're both very good writers, and they're both veteran reporters. And Schlender had a long relationship with Jobs, which is kind of weird. You know, it was like part friendship, part reporter, part subject, part sort of mutual respect. They were neighbors. They lived together.
Didn't he bring his kids over and stuff to Jobs' house? Visited him in the hospital and
right, exactly.
Wow, yeah, so they're pretty good friends then.
Well, kind of. Like as Schlender explains in the book, he never really felt friends with Jobs. I mean, mm-hmm. Jobs would always be. He had this very disarming manner, so he would invite him over. Like this one Saturday morning, he had an early cut of Toy Story, which Pixar had been working on, and he wanted to, he obviously wanted to get some kids. He wanted to get someone's reaction to this. So he invited Schlender and his kids over, and they watched it, and then he was like, instantly he turns to the kids and asks them what they think. Mm-hmm. You know, he's doing some like some sort of market research. So you know what I mean? It's like, it was intimate and it was friendly, but there was also an ulterior motive. And I think, you know, he never, you know, he was never as close to him as I don't think. I think, you know, Larry Ellison was probably closer, right? And
he's, you know, the Oracle guy, right?
Yeah.
With the sex,
yeah.
sex dungeon.
I think that's Eric Schmidt, actually.
Oh, you think he's into the sex dungeons too?
Oh, I think there's been, I think Valleywag actually documented stuff like that.
I mean, you look at his picture, you know, something maniacal is happening in his sex dungeon. So Leander, let me ask you this. As far as the last Steve Jobs biography by Walter Isaacson, that book seems to be getting a lot of crap lately, and there seems to be some consensus that it just wasn't a very accurate book, or very, I don't want to say well written, but people are hating on it, and I don't necessarily understand why. What's like the main argument with that book?
Well, I think they feel it's too Steve centric. So, you know, Isaacson sat down in the last couple of years of Jobs' life, you know, did a bunch of interviews with Jobs, and then he spoke to some people in his inner circle, but I don't think Isaacson probed that much. You know, he didn't really, but you know, I think there were two main weaknesses. One is that he didn't really look at how he concentrated on Steve's personal life and not his professional life. So he didn't really dig into how Steve ran Apple and how he developed all these products. And he didn't get any of that in detail. You know, he would ask people like, you know, how was Steve in general? And so he would get a general description. And of course people would, you know, they would recount the stories about when Steve blew up. You know, which is frequent enough to be very much a big part of his personality. And this is exactly what people who work with him had to endure. Constant outbursts and him getting upset. But, you know, there was also a lot of times when he was clear and rational and intelligent and made good decisions. But I think Isaacson never really dug into that, you know, and he never asked all the people he worked with, you know, what those decisions were and how they led to Apple becoming a success. Mm-hmm. You know, so the Isaacson book was like a really long catalog of really depressing bad behavior, one outburst after another. And I found it really depressing in the end, because it was like, it just, you know, it sort of adds up to a portrait of a basket case. It wasn't counterbalanced by any of the positive stuff that all these people, you know, that he worked with say was a truer portrait. And this is what they granted this in this interview with this book, right? So Tim Cook and Johnny Ive and Eddie Q, and some people from the Next Days and Disney and Pixar sat down and gave Schlender interviews that were sort of on the official on the record interviews. Okay, and you know, and there were some revelations in there. You know, primarily Cook offering to give Jobs part of his liver to help his boss live longer. And you know, Cook, the way Cook told it is that he selflessly has turned that down. Mm-hmm. And somebody who was as self-centered as Steve has been portrayed would never do anything like that. You know, ergo, he was a great guy. So,
because Steve and Tim shared a very rare blood type, right?
Yeah, right.
So it was kind of like he didn't have a ton of options out there.
Right, exactly. And Tim, obviously, you know, liked and respected Jobs enough and maybe even loved him enough to sacrifice, you know, a major body part, an organ.
Right, like a part of your liver, right?
Yeah.
Which you only have one of.
Which it's grows back. I mean, it's not like it was going to grow back. Like, that's the thing. It's like, it's not even a procedure that's like going to permanently harm Tim Cook. Like, it's something that is medically proven to like it be okay. Like, if you survive the surgery, which there's a good chance of it, you know, it'll grow back.
If it survives. Yeah. Right.
I mean, yeah. That's major surgery, like, where they take part of your liver. It's
you're
going to
survive. Like, the surgery has a really high success rate, and then the liver will grow back. So it's not even like he's giving Jobs like permanently, you know, it just seems like that tapped into like the irrational nature of Jobs. Just like, I don't know. That's what I got.
So, Leander, how did the book portray him differently than the Walter Isaacson bio?
Well, there's a lot of testimonials that say, saying, yeah, you know, Steve could barely be a jerk, but you know, it was always in the service of the app or the company or the products, and you know, I learned to live with it, and he was actually, and you know, he had a sense of humor, and he could be very, very insightful, and so it was kind of counterbalanced by a lot more positive stuff. Mm-hmm. But I found at the end of the day, it not that convincing. I think the biggest problem was not necessarily that. I think, you know, because they only had limited time with say Johnny Ive, right? So it looks like they had a couple of interviews with Johnny Ive, and they got Johnny Ive to say, yeah, you know, Steve could be deeply intuitive and was much, much more creative than he's being credited for, and he had a much better influence than, you know, the Isaacson book has portrayed. Mm-hmm. But then that's it. You know, they don't dig into most of the products are covered in like a couple of pages. Mm. The iPod, the iPhone, the iPad, it's devoted like its development is dashed off in a couple of pages. So it makes for a good quick read. It's brisk and it's actually quite original. You know, to give them credit, they don't rehash a lot of the same stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's well written and it's easy to read. But you go, okay, well, how exactly did he contribute to the iPod? What were his, you know, insights? What were his, you know, what were the challenges? How did he overcome those problems? You know, what did he learn during his wilderness years at Next and Pixar that helped him develop these products? And this is what they're touting the book is giving you insight into, but I actually don't think it does.
Wasn't one of the things the book kind of alluded to was that when he was first at Apple, starting Apple, before he was released, he was kind of a different person than when he came back. And when he came back, he was much more polished and a better manager.
Yeah, but, you know, this is the premise of the book. And this is also the received wisdom, right? This is not new. This is what people have said for years. Mm-hmm. You know, what they're saying is new in this is that, oh, yeah, his colleagues for the first time have come out and, you know, helped document this. But it's not true. The book doesn't document it. It just says it.
It just leaves it at that. You're like, yeah. Steve Jobs was different, chapter two.
Right. And they have, you know, they all go on and say that he was different, but they do not document in any detailed way how he was different.
So that's kind of where you would have liked to see more fleshed out.
Yeah, I think it's almost the same as the Isaacson book, just a bit more, you know, nicer. And it definitely tries to, you know, it's just nicer, and there's more quotes about what a nice guy he was instead of, you know, just how horrible he was.
So it kind of chicks off the edges where, yeah, he could be a jerk, but he also had this kind side and maybe tries to show him as a more balanced person.
Right, and it said that he was better able to, he was calmer, he wasn't quite so impetuous, he was able to delegate to his lieutenants. Mm. And I think all these were true, but, you know, it doesn't show you how he delegated I don't think it shows in any great detail how he delegated to the lieutenants. It says that he does that. It talks about the team that he put together and had some really, I thought the best quotes were from Bill Gates, and Bill Gates talked a little bit about the team and how they all earned their pay. Mm. But then, you know, like when it comes to like developing a product, there actually wasn't that much insight into it. The one exception, there's a couple of exceptions to that. You know, Eddie Q was one. I think when he talked about Eddie, talked a little bit about how he developed iTunes as a music store. Mm-hmm. And one of the big problems was like how they charge they didn't want to charge a dollar every transaction, so they lumped them together, an idea he got from the cell phone companies, and how they charge, you know, for phone calls, right? They lump it together at the end of the month, and mm-hmm. they charge you, you know, for a whole month's worth of service. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was one of the few original stories that I hadn't read before, and that gave a little bit of insight and how Steve reacted to that. But there was only like one line about, oh, yeah, Steve was delighted with that.
Chapter three.
Right. And you go, okay, great. You know, it didn't really delve into his delegation of that task to Eddie and how Eddie came up with the, you know, how Eddie presented it to him and how exactly he took it. You know, I just found it a little bit, you know, it didn't really get into the nitty gritty details. Yeah.
Why do you think that maybe Apple participated in this? Because what I didn't say at the beginning of the conversation is Apple didn't just endorse this book. They gave access to the writers to talk to different people and were involved in the actual writing of the book. Why do you think they're doing this now? Is it just to portray Steve Jobs differently than he has been?
Yeah, they said it was about time that they reset the balance. They felt that there had been, a rash of books, right? One of them being Yukari Kane's Haunted Empire. I think that was the one that really upset them. That was one of the few books they came out and said that they didn't like. And, you know, I guess they felt they wanted to redress the balance and they wanted something out there that was a little more, that didn't dwell so much on Jobs's negative characteristics, which had been, you know, documented exhaustively. And maybe, I don't know, you know, maybe there's a little, because of the movies, the Jobs movie that's being shot right now.
Or maybe it was the powerful Jobs movie that came out
with Ashton Kutcher.
powerful performance of Steve Jobs acting like a jerk and getting mad and throwing things. I mean,
yeah, well, I know they've been complaining about the betrayal of Apple in general in the press, and it had been and still is dominated by, you know, portrayals of Jobs, and they are mostly negative.
He's such a larger than life character.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, who throws a device into a fish tank and when the bubbles come out, say, make it smaller? Yeah. Right? Who does that?
Yeah, right. No one.
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Exactly.
Who had the cojones to throw devices into fish tanks?
But the interesting question is the other stuff. You know, like is how he, you know, at other times when he was much more, you know, rational, and that makes for a great story. See, that's the trouble, is that those are the two stories that tend to get told, the ones where Steve loses his beans.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And loses they don't his beans, say,
exactly.
You know, yeah, I had a nice meeting with Steve. You know, he gave me some tea and
he was very lovely.
Right. We just, you know, we spread some prototypes out on the table and we discussed them calmly and rationally. And he had this great idea, you know, that maybe we should do it in a lighter shade of blue. But in a way, that's the interesting stuff, though, I think. You know, I mean, I've got an interview I'm working on right now, and based on someone who worked very closely with Steve that does include a lot of that stuff. And the kind of the challenge, you know, it's been really horrible to write, because the challenge is kind of, it's so exhaustive. For one, you know, there's a ton of detail about how he works with Steve and the other members of the team on a bunch of different products. Mm-hmm. And at some point I thought, like, does anyone really, you know, care about this?
Did he throw anything at anyone?
Well, he did, a little bit, but most of it was actually sort of calm and rational, intelligent conversation. And it was meeting after meeting after meeting for years and years and years. And it's a lot more straightforward. It's a lot more precise. But I actually think that, you know, this interview that I've done, I've still got to get approval to run some parts of it, you know, for me, opened my eyes more so than I think anything I read in that I've read so far.
Can you say who the interview's with?
No, because I can't, unfortunately.
Was it Tim Cook?
No.
Was it
no. But, you know, like Tim Cook. Tim Cook's got an amazing story. Like, you know, I only just know little snippets of it, and I know that it's a lot more complex and a lot more detailed, and there's a lot more interesting than we've seen so far. Almost nothing's been written about him, and I learned nothing about Tim Cook except that he wanted to give his boss his liver, you know, from these interviews that he gave to for this latest book, which I think is a shame, really. I mean, so I was a bit disappointed by it.
I see an opportunity, a market opportunity here, Leander, inside Tim's brain. Well, before we move on, it would actually be cool to talk about a couple of these other stories that came out of the book, some of these short stories. But before we do that, I do want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. If you are running a business, if you're sending invoices to people, if you need to get a wrangle on your accounting, sending invoices to clients, FreshBooks is the way to do that. It's so wonderfully built, so easy to use. And it doesn't just make it easy to send invoices and collect payments from your clients, which it very much does, but they give you all these powerful features to track your expenses.
Yeah, the expenses is a pretty neat feature, because you can pass these on directly to a client or a customer with that, and it imports it directly from your bank account. So it'll track them. You just connect your bank account and it'll track all the expenses associated with that project. Then you can just bang them straight over. So it eliminates a ton of paperwork.
Well, not only that, once you have your expenses piped in, FreshBooks will actually show you how much money you're actually making, your net profit. So not just how much money your business has made, but after your expenses, how much you actually have left, which is obviously very important when you're running a business. And it has all these powerful reporting features. But one of the ways I was using it is, one, you can track your time very easily and then, you know, assign your time to different clients and, you know, make your $500 an hour as I do. But if you're driving somewhere, for instance, I used to do this all the time. FreshBooks allows you to take photos of your different receipts and then you can assign them to clients. So whenever I would have to park downtown, because downtown parking in Seattle, for anyone that lives here, will tell you it's an absolute nightmare. Leander, it's probably just as bad as San Francisco. It's truly terrible.
Yeah.
And it's very, very expensive. So I would take a picture of my receipt, and that way I could assign it to my client. So when they would open up the invoice, they would have, here's the expense that you're being billed, and here's a bill, and then here's an actual photograph of the receipt, so you know that Airfont's not just trying to rip you
off. Exactly, $250 for a parking.
$250 for parking.
Yeah,
which actually, in a way, was bad for me because that's what I used to do. Is I would just make up numbers and assign them to people.
You can't do that anymore, can you?
I can't do that anymore. Which is bad for me, but you know, it does make me a more honest person. So in a way, it's helped my karma. So I owe FreshBooks for that. FreshBooks makes it super simple to run your entire business from your Mac. You can run it from the palm of your hand and your iPhone with your iPhone or your iPad. Their iOS app is fantastic. And that's what I actually used to use to take pictures of receipts. Try it out yourself. Head on over to FreshBooks.com/cultcast. You can try all of FreshBooks features free for 30 days. Please enter the code CULTCAST in the How Did You Hear About Us section so they know that you found out about them through us. Go give FreshBooks a try. Thank you, FreshBooks, for supporting this episode. Okay, guys, before we move on to faves and raves, I thought this was pretty interesting. Alex, so in light of all of the news, Steve Jobs news and the book, some of his classmates have become somewhat entrepreneurial themselves. Is that right?
Yeah.
His former classmates, high school classmates.
Yeah. They're selling their yearbooks on eBay for thousands of dollars.
How much?
Tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the one that sold so far was just a little over 12K. And then there's a few listed right now. I think the lowest price is over 4,500. It's like 4,900. One's got a commencement address with his name on it, and that bumped the price up to $6,500.
Oh my gosh. Can I be honest with you guys? Can I be honest? If I had an extra $12,000, I might buy one of these.
Would you buy it over an Apple Watch edition? Because that's how much that costs.
Oh, I would absolutely rather have one of these yearbooks than an Apple Watch edition. No, absolutely no question. Would it not be cool to have one of Steve Jobs' original yearbooks and you could open it and it's like, hey man, have a great summer, LOL, Steve Jobs.
Yeah, well, it's not just Jobs, it's his younger sister Patty, who's a freshman at the time when he was a senior. It's Steve Woz, the venerable Steve Woz, is in the yearbook.
Oh, even better.
Bill Fernandez, who's the company's first employee, is in the yearbook.
Is Bob Mansfeld in there?
No.
That's a bummer. He's like the head of like the cheer team. Cheer squad.
But yeah, it's an eclectic class. The only man to have traveled the entire length of the Amazon River was in Jobs' graduating class. Roy Zimmerman, who's apparently a decently famous
I don't even know who that is. Leander, do you know who Roy Zimmerman is?
No.
I have no idea who that is. I thought maybe Leander was because he's into weird music that no one else has heard of. No, nothing, Leander. Okay, before we move on to faves and raves, one last little story from this new Steve Jobs book. So I think this is interesting to bring up because oftentimes in the popular media and, you know, just the world at large, Steve Jobs is credited for having invented the iPad, invented the iPhone, and he somehow single-handedly, you know, invented all these different devices. And then we hear from a guy like Ken Siegel, Leander, who was talking about how he wanted to name the iMac the Mac Man. Remember that conversation?
Right. Yeah,
and I was like, that is the worst name I have ever heard of in my life. I'm so happy that Ken Siegel was able to convince him not to do that. So here's another story along that same vein. When two guys from Apple, Greg Christie and Bass Ording, had spent several months working on a prototype iPad, they'd come up with multi-touch. And they had built it into this conference table type thing. And Johnny Ive was super excited. And he wanted to show it to Steve Jobs because he felt it could be used in all these different applications. And so they get a meeting with Steve. And they're showing it to Steve. And Johnny is very enthusiastic in talking about the different technologies in which this can be implemented. And Steve Jobs was probably just sitting there, you know, with a partial look of scorn upon his face. And he was being very dismissive of this new technology, and paraphrasing Johnny Ives, he just didn't see the potential in it, and he was very, very dismissive. Leander, I thought this was interesting because we've heard these stories before where Steve Jobs kind of discounts something that ended up being very, very critical to Apple's success in the future, and at the time, he just didn't see it. It kind of goes to show that Steve Jobs' team, like the team he has in place, is really what's most important at Apple now as far as creating new products, because they kind of prevented him from maybe not doing something that that Apple should have done that ended up being really successful. Would you agree?
Oh, there's tons of examples. Yeah, I mean, even going back to the original Macintosh, there was a couple of examples of that. One of them being that they built in support for more memory, mm-hmm. which they knew was going to be a huge problem, and in fact saved it. You know, when they were able to come out with an updated model 6 months after it launched. But there was also like one of the early disk drives. He was forbidden from using a certain drive, and expressly went against Jobs' orders and used it anyway. Yeah, there's tons of examples of that. In fact, the whole, a big middle section of the book is about how Pixar kind of thrived by keeping him at arm's length.
expressly forbidding him from giving right. ideas.
Yeah, yeah. Because, they were worried, they basically ignored, whatever he told them to do, which is kind of incredible. It's kind of glossed over, it's not made. I think it was, there was some really interesting stuff. The interesting stuff in this book, I don't think is explored in the depth mm-hmm. that it should have been, which is, and exactly that, like, about he's deified and he's celebrated for all his successes. But I think there was many examples of, occasions when, it was his team that saved the day.
That rescued him from himself.
Yeah, and that's what a little bit of a shame, like with all these sort of like, that this sort of Steve-centric view of Apple is that that all the great stuff and all the other great people that have been contributed really haven't been recognized.
Mm. Yeah, exactly, and hopefully in the future, some of these people that we probably have never heard of, who have contributed so much to all the different products that we know and love these days, will get some more attention, because it has been very Steve-centric and Johnny Ive-centric up until this point. Okay, well, with that said, why don't we go ahead and move on to faves and raves, and faves and raves, and Alex, you take it this time.
Faves.
Oh, you went low. I thought you were going to go high on that one.
Yeah, I'm always keeping you on your toes.
That you are, you trickster. This is the segment where we talk about our favorite tech and apps. Well, we pitch our favorite tech and apps, and then we vote on which is best. I have got a really cool one this week. And
oh, do you?
I think you guys should just let me pitch it, and then you guys can just vote for me, and we'll wrap up the show. Does that sound good?
All right, get going.
No, I want to hear what you guys have too, because I might learn about something new. So, does anyone want to go first? Leander, what do you got?
Okay, I'll get a Lumia.
I don't like it.
Nokia.
Next.
Hold your horses there. It's actually not bad. Nokia Lumia.
You're being serious right now.
65. Yeah, I'm being totally serious because my son, I gave him my hammer down iPhone 5S when I got my 6 Plus. Mm. And it already has befallen a couple of unfortunate accidents.
And, you dropped it a couple times?
Oh, my goodness. It's been completely destroyed. And, this is like a, $600-$700 piece of hardware, unsubsidized, $1,000 piece worth of hardware by the time you account for all the expenses. So I wanted to give him a cheap phone, and I saw that these Nokias they're like $50 for for a carrier specific one. For about $70 for an unlocked one, but for an AT&T one, it's about $50.
That's pretty cheap.
Which can't be beat. And the thing's actually really pretty good. It's about the size of the old iPhone 4S, and it's nothing super fancy, but it's actually pretty responsive. I actually quite like the.
It's a Windows phone.
Yeah, the Windows interface is pretty good.
Uh-huh.
It was really easy to set up. There's a few Windows like annoyances, like every time you open something up, it asks if you want to do this, that, or the other. So there's a lot of notifications to get through, mm-hmm. but once you get through them, it works pretty well. And
he's not running into any problems actually making calls or texting people.
Well. Okay,
because I hear a lot of Windows phone owners complain about those two things.
Okay, all right. So here we get to the important part, which is he actually refused to take it. So it's sitting here waiting for the thing, because his phone is really flaky, but it's just hanging on in there. You know, he can still use it for texting when he's near Wi-Fi.
So you bought this beautiful Windows phone for him and slid it across the table, and he kind of like looked at you in disgust and slid
right,
it back.
Slid it right back. So I set it up, and I've been playing with it because I was kind of curious to see what it was like, and I was actually quite impressed with how it worked. So yeah, we'll see. One, you know, maybe I should save it for the day he actually accepts it and starts to use it.
So what is he using now? He's obviously not using the Windows phone.
No, he's using the iPhone 5S. It's pretty much, you know, like the screen's cracked. There's huge pieces of glass missing. That the cell phone signal keeps dropping in and out, you know, so it's completely unreliable. That's why I want to get him to get a new phone, because I want to be able to, you know, every time I try to phone him, I get a busy, an out of service signal.
Oh yeah, okay.
But you know, he's pulling a Charlton Heston, you know,
from my cold dead hands.
Right.
Good reference, solid reference, Leander. Plus one for Leander. What's the model number, or what's the model on that?
635 Nokia Lumia 635.
I heard you saying it like Bomb Dog over there. You're like, you're calling it Nokia. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I wasn't really sure how to say it.
I like that you automatically went for that though. That's cool. Okay. Alex, Buster, what do you guys got?
Go ahead, Buster.
Oh, okay.
Snap.
Snappy. All right, so I'm reviewing an electric mountain bike from
cool.
iZip. It's like the E3 Peak iZip mountain bike.
Yeah, so iZip is made by Curry Tech, which made the turbo electric bike that I reviewed like a year or two ago.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's really awesome. I mean, it goes off-roading, so I've been taking it like places that I go hiking. And
how
so
much are you loving it?
Oh, dude, it's awesome. It's like riding a roller coaster because, I mean, it goes like 28 to 30 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go bombing down hills, and then you go bombing up hills, too.
Yes!
It's great.
Like, I know!
Even on the street, it's fast, too. I passed like a whole squad of cops doing like their bike training one day. It was great. You just blast it. It's like it's like the funnest thing I've ever ridden, man.
Yes.
Really? How fast will it go?
It says its top speed's like 28 to 30
miles
governed.
An hour. They're That's governed, though, Leander. They have to keep them from going faster than that legally.
You can modify that thing.
You can modify them. If you want to see some crazy YouTube videos, search electric bike on YouTube, and you'll see some that the governors have been taking off. And I saw this one video. This guy was going like 60 miles per hour down this mountain.
Dang.
That's going to be Buster here pretty soon.
No, I don't get too crazy with it because I'm like, yeah, I'm going to kill myself on this thing.
I will.
Go too fast.
Or someone else, right?
Yeah, totally.
You run into someone like crossing the trail at 60 miles an hour, and those bikes are heavy.
Yep.
Because all the battery packs are jammed in there. I will never forget, I was riding one of those down one of our bike trails. It was paved, and there was like this decked out biker guy, right? He's wearing like the aerodynamic helmet, and his calves are like 16 inches around, and he's got all like the biking gear on, and he's bent forward, pedaling as fast as he could go. And I passed him in my jeans and my sweatshirt, just pedaling casually. And as I went by, I obnoxiously yelled to him, "On your left!" That's what's fun about electric bikes. It makes you seem.
How long's the battery last?
Yeah, that's the only problem. Like an hour and a half, pretty much, is about. That's with me putting it like at max speed and just going straight.
Okay, so if you pedaled a bit and actually broke a small bead of sweat, then it might last a bit longer.
No. I'm pedaling as fast as I can the entire.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay,
I mean, that's what's nice about it. It's not. It's pedal assisted, so I mean, it's like you're motivated to. Pedal as fast as you can, because then you can go as fast as possible.
So they amplify the power of your legs.
Right, yeah.
Just what I need.
Alex could use that, let's be honest.
I saw some guy breezing up the hill here at when I was having breakfast on Sunday. It's a pretty steep hill, and he was on one of those big, chunky, cargo-carrying ones. And it's really uncanny to watch the thing go up the hill, because he's pedaling at the same time, but it's gliding up at... You know, four times the speed that even Lance Armstrong could do it.
I don't know. Lance, he took a lot of roids, didn't he? That's right. you'd have to eat a lot of roids to get up the hill that fast without a battery.
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw one, I saw a guy do that exact same thing on the hill outside my house. And we used to live on a really steep hill. And this guy was just bombing up the hill, but he was pedaling just normally.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
I thought this guy's quads just had to be massive.
Right.
That was before I knew about electric bikes.
They're really taking off here. There's a bike store up in my neighborhood now that sells electric bikes. And they've always got people checking them out. There's a ton of people that are getting into it.
Well, here's the bad part, Buster. How much does the bike cost?
It's $3,000.
Oh. That's actually less than I would have thought.
Yeah, right.
I went with one of the more reasonably priced ones. They asked me if I wanted like the $10,000 big bad boy, and I was like, yeah, I do. But realistically, I could never buy something like that. So
I'll be stealing this from you. So whatever is not grand larceny, send me that one. All right, Alex. Actually, you know what, Alex? I'll let you go last. I'll go next, just in case you have decided to pick the same thing that I picked. So you guys may have heard a little app came out, I think, last week, and it was made free, so it got a lot of attention. It's called MacID, M-A-C-I-D. It is an app that you install on your iPhone, and then it comes with a free Mac app. And what it allows you to do is use your iPhone's Touch ID to authenticate on your Mac. So you set it up on your computer, you set it up on your iPhone, and then whenever you need to like log into your computer, you just touch your thumb to the Touch ID, and it will, you know, authenticate you that way. So you don't have to enter in your password. It also works if you ever need to enter your password for like the Apple Store or anything like that. But that's actually not what I actually love about it, because I kind of find using my thumb to access my computer to be cumbersome. It's actually just faster to use your password. What I like about it is you can set on proximity awareness on your phone. So when you get close to your Mac, it will actually... the screen will come on, so you can just type in your password right away. And then when you walk away from your Mac, it will actually lock it down. So it's really useful if you want to keep your Mac secure. But even more so than that, it allows you to set up a multi-touch password on your trackpad. So whenever I get close to my computer, it turns on, and I can just tap my trackpad in a certain sequence that I've set up. And instead of entering my password, I can log into my Mac that way. And that is hugely time saving.
That's pretty cool.
So I walk up to my Mac, it turns on before I even get there. I just tap my trackpad a few times, boom, my Mac is unlocked. Mega pick. Yeah. Mega pick. although Buster's is pretty cool too. I gotta say, I have to admit it. The app is now $4, but you just buy it on iOS. The Mac version is free, but you do need both for this to work. It was free for 2 days, so maybe some of you already nabbed it. I think it's well worth $4 if you want to be able to get into your Mac without, you know, being hassled to enter your password. That's my pick, MacID. Alex.
Well, tax time is upon us, and
Alex is about to pitch TurboTax.
No, I have gotten this thing called the Doxy scanner, which is a wireless scanner that's like supposed to make you go paper free.
Uh-huh. So
it's actually pretty cool. It's their Wi-Fi equipped one that just came out the update, and it's just this really tiny little scanner. It's just big enough basically to fit a piece of paper through. And it will just wirelessly beam anything you scan through it to an iOS app. And from there, you can send it to Dropbox or iCloud or whatever.
So it's like a document scanner, essentially, right?
Pretty much. But it's super portable. It's got like a 4 or 5 hour battery of just like straight scanning, which is a lot. And it's nice. I mean, it just works. It's just reliable. So it's good for this time of year if you're needing to scan a bunch of documents or whenever. I've been trying to go paperless, so it's been helping me with that.
I've been paperless for like 2 years.
Dude, I've been paperless for 2 years. Get on my level.
I haven't even touched paper in like 2 years.
But there's a few different models. The original is like 160, and then the Wi-Fi one that I have is 230. And yeah, they're pretty cool.
Okay. So. There you have it. Now is where the men are made. It's time to vote. Alex.
Oh, Alex, okay. So I got to choose between a Nokia phone, an iPhone app, and a $3,000 electric bike.
Yeah. Mm, tough choices, one? I know.
I wish I would have picked my Ferrari this week.
I should have picked, I was going to pitch my brand new Ferrari too. We could say that for
next time. Okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to go with Buster's bike.
Dude, you've never even been on a mountain. What are you going to do with a mountain bike?
Dude, I was on a mountain last week. Don't worry.
Were you?
Yeah.
And were you thinking the whole time, oh man, this would be so much easier if I was on a bicycle? No.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't help any. I helped Buster pitch that stupid pig. I only have myself to blame. Leander.
Yeah, you know, it's like Alex, it's a tough call, but I think I'm going to have to go with a bike.
Ah, son yeah, of a gun. Now, Buster. Leander, would you actually utilize a bike on a mountain?
Oh,
when was the last time you've been to a mountain?
Yeah, I live in San Francisco. My goodness, yeah. I've done some ton of biking on mountains. Actually, I probably wouldn't use it on the mountain because I actually quite like riding on up a hill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool, too. All the ladies think you're awesome when you're going like 20 miles an hour up the hill. Buster.
But that sounds like, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
What do you think, Buster? I mean, the choice is clear.
I can't pick my own, can I?
No.
Ah. Shoot, I'm going to give Alex's a pity vote just because. I can't pick the Nokia phone on the Cultcast.
Yeah, I know, clearly.
Yours is a $4 app, and so, yeah, at least you can go paperless with Alex's.
Did mine not sound incredibly useful? You're not going to use
it. I have that app downloaded. I haven't used it yet because I've been too lazy to set it up, but it does sound cool.
It sounds pretty baller, doesn't it?
Yeah. How does it work again?
So what's,
let me just go through that. Remember.
You didn't listen.
It's just like Knock, isn't it? Where you can like knock on your iPhone, or there's another one where you can like Touch ID on your iPhone, or another one where it's like proximity based. I feel like there's like four of these type of apps.
There might be other ones, but the main feature of this app is not what I like about it. It's I don't ever want to touch my finger to the Touch ID to unlock my Mac. What I like is when I walk up to my Mac, it turns it wakes it, and then I can tap the trackpad a few times and it lets me into my Mac right away. Sounds pretty baller, doesn't it?
It does. Well, I used the other one, Knock, for a while, but it stopped working. It just wouldn't work. Yeah, and it dropped me batty, so I got rid of it.
Yeah, I've actually had some problems with this one too, but I wasn't going to talk about those. It has been working very reliably. I have had a few problems here and there with it not connecting the trackpad.
That Doxy scanner actually doesn't work.
We all come clean.
There we go.
Leander's like, oh, actually, this Nokia is a total piece of crap. I was just saying it to get your vote. Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to pick the Nokia. The Nokia.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Because you know what? I think Nokia is just the coolest phone out there.
You're so full of crap.
And I've always wanted to have one that has like cool colors on the shell. So congratulations, Leander. You get a vote.
All right, cool.
And Buster wins, but just barely. with his crappy motorized electric bike.
You didn't get any votes, man.
Yeah, you guys suck. You clearly weren't listening. I know Buster wasn't. He didn't even know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
that's the problem is everyone tuned out because I talked about it for too long. Alrighty, well, if you guys want to see our picks, we always include them in the show notes. We put them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCultCast. Head on over to the Facebook page. Let us know who you think rightfully won. I think the choice is clear here. We have some bias going on among the panel. But I know our listeners are going to be able to see this clearly. Oh, and before we go, if you're tired of losing your keys, tired of losing your wallet, your backpack, your merce, go check out chipolo.net, chipolo.net. Never lose your stuff again. Well, that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But you know what? If you want to come tell us what apps and gadgets you like these days, come say hi to us on Twitter. Buster's BST3R. Alex is Alex E. Heath. Leander is L. Caney. I'm at Airfon. And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how to use the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and then we'll see you guys next time. I can't believe not a single one of you guys chose my pick. Alex, when I was describing it, you were like, whoa, that sounds cool. You literally said that while I was describing it.
Yeah. It's a mouse.
What's wrong with you?
It's an electric bike. Dude.
A tranny. Really?
I have my suspicions about him.
Is it the hair?
Hey. Oh!
What?
Huh?
Were you talking about me?
We're talking about Apple News.
Apple just talking News. Slander on you. That's all.
Slander on Leander.
It's the Adam's apple.
Oh.
I haven't had an Adam's apple for years.
Does that go away as like the older you get?
Yeah, does replaced it? By a big double chin.
It just gets well insulated.
Yeah, it's still there under 3 inches of blubber.
It's protective tissue.